And welcome to Everybody A, Everybody Gay,
a queer exploration normally of Pretty Little Liars, but tonight about the film Do Revenge.
With your hosts, Speak Pirate, aka Joanna. I'm here, I'm queer, and I have a cat named Spencer who kind of vengeful.
And your other host, LCO123, aka Vina, a proud member of the Church of Vander Jesus, who I think would be a pretty big fan of this movie.
Oh my goodness. She possibly wrote this movie. Let's be honest.
Yeah, you're totally right. This has Vander Jesus's paw prints all over it.
Oh my gosh. So the movie Do Revenge, it's on Netflix, and it's kind of like a high school version of Strangers on a Train. Which of course was written by Patricia Highsmith, a famous lesbian novelist who also wrote The Price of Salt, which turned into a little movie called Carol. So
you may have heard of it.
may have. But the idea of it is that two girls who no one knows are connected to one another are going to get revenge on the person who has wronged their opposite number.
And I would say that the Strangers on a Train motif is like, it kind of ebbs and flows throughout the movie, but I think this is a really fun time. It's a very, it's very much one of those movies where it's like the stakes of being a high schooler are like the highest stakes possible. Everything is life and death. And it's, glitzy and colorful, lots of fun music, lots of smart, quick dialogue, and some really, really great performances from some young actors.
Yeah, I 100% agree. It's very queer. And you kind of sold it to me as like, PLL adjacent. This is the movie that would kind of be made if Ali and Mona teamed up in the early seasons. And I think that was very accurate.
I'm glad you agreed with that. Yeah, I would say that Drea would be the Ali character and Eleanor would be Mona. Would you agree?
Well, I think it's so hard to say, because I think that this particular movie, which if you haven't seen it yet, highly recommend that you go and you watch it and then you come back and listen to the rest of our podcast, because as you know, we spoil things. We come into it with the idea that you've probably already seen it if you want to listen to us talk about it. But of course, that's not required. You can definitely listen to us spoil it. Hopefully it won't take away any of your enjoyment. However, I think it is up for debate, like who's Ali and who's Mona. And in a similar way, you could have the same debate about Ali and Mona, like who created who here?
Yeah.
So I think like, whose idea was it really for them to do this revenge plot? Whose actions first instigated things? And we also, again, similar to PLL and to like, Ali and Mona and Mona and Hannah, we have the makeover scene where Drea like makes over Eleanor into this, gazelle who's going to go out and become one of the popular kids.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, this movie is like, it's chock full of references to other, kind of teen classic movies, which is really fun. Like, I it's always fun when you watch a movie and you can tell that it's made by people who love the genre of movie that they're exploring. You know, there's definitely like a little bit of Heathers in here, I think. There's a little bit of Clueless. There's a little bit of Mean Girls. Like, it's all kind of in there. I will preface this discussion by sharing that some of my recollection of this movie might be a bit fuzzier than usual. The reason for that is actually a pretty good reason, which is that I happened to watch this. I've seen this movie one time, and it was several weeks ago, and it was actually on a date with my now girlfriend. How many minutes into the podcast before I got to drop that? Like four and a half?
Doing great.
And thank you. And this was like, feeling each other out, lead up to the first kiss. I was a little distracted is what I'm trying to say. I was a little distracted and a little anxious for this movie to kind of like get to the end of its running time. So if there are some details that are a little fuzzy, that is why. I would say I'm sorry, but I'm really not. So anyway, that, but also the, I would say it makes that movie in some ways even more queer because, you know,
it's true.
It's connected in with this memory. So
to queerness in real life. I really love that story. And I also love that you and your girlfriend are not only official, but podcast official in that, like, she knows about the podcast and she's like been listening to some of it, and you can now mention her on the podcast. So like,
and I will, gentle listeners, and I will.
Oh my goodness. All right. All right. That is so exciting. So, it's so nice to know that like good things can still happen in the world. That's really wonderful.
Yes. So anyway, that was my disclaimer / me bragging about my personal life on the podcast. So now we can talk about this movie.
Okay. Awesome. So I thought it was a great movie. I agree that it has like just a ton of call outs to like this kind of early 90s movie. Like there's a point where like one of the songs that they choose is a song that is from Clueless. Like there's a Horowitz Hall that's one of the buildings. They also have some references to like 10 Things I Hate About You. And also I want to say the only, but I feel like I don't know if that's 100% true, but like definitely the main adult in this movie, the headmaster of the school, is played by Sarah Michelle Gellar, who is just like, yeah, I mean, you know, of course she's Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but she's also, she was in Cruel Intentions.
Yeah.
She was in various of the I Know What You Did Last Summers, you know, just tons of movies from this era had her stamp on them. So it's really fun to see her like, you know, kicking ass and taking names in a new role.
Oh, 100%. And I think there's a lot of Cruel Intentions in this movie as well.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I love the color palette of this movie. Like it's all just like these bright, it's like, it's sort of like a movie styled by Aria or something, you know, like it's just like bright colors, ridiculous outfits, you know, things that teenagers would of course never be able to wear, but it works because it's like, that's what it is. That feels very almost a bit Legally Blonde to me in a way. Yeah. Just like everything's kind of like hyper saturated.
Yeah. So this movie takes place at like a Tony private school. Mm-hmm. And I do want to call out that in the Pretty Little Liars books, in the world of the books, which we don't often talk about because we're very focused on the TV series, but in the books, the Liars also go to a school that's like Country Day. It's like Rosewood mm-hmm. Country Day or whatever it is. But yeah, so it takes place in that sort of like rarefied private school world. And one of the things that I think is such an interesting, you know, such an interesting compare and contrast with Pretty Little Liars is the way that this movie plays with what will it take to hold a man accountable for his actions. So, yes. Vina, what do you think of Max, who is kind of the, I would call him like the charmy, smarmy villain of the piece.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think of him as like a young Presra Fitz?
Yeah, I see a lot of young Presra Fitz. I also see a bit of Ren Kingston in there. And, you know, I think that there are elements of a lot of the men. There's a little bit of Noel Kahn in there too, probably. But for sure, as a young Presra Fitz, Max is this guy. And I just think I thought it was so funny the way that he keeps sort of using social justice as like a cover for his terrible behavior. You know, he's the male feminist and he's in this polyamorous relationship and like sort of setting himself as like, oh, I'm so free and I'm so understanding and I'm such a good guy. And like so much about so much of his identity is about this idea of like, but I'm a good guy. And it's like, at what point are you just, you sort of weaponizing that idea and in no real way are you actually a good guy? And I think that's a thing that we have seen with so many of the men on Pretty Little Liars. You know, we see it with like when they're always talking about Toby and how trustworthy he is, who could ever lie to that face, you know? Or when they're talking about Caleb and how, you know, who deserves him or who doesn't deserve him. It's like, it's this idea, but it's not actually happening in practice.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the reason I would compare him to Presra fits more so, I think, than to some of the other liar men, although there are definitely parallels there, especially, I do agree, kind of with the Ren and the Noel Khan of it all. But really, like, Max appears to have, like, he's a white guy, he has the right parents, and he has, like, just limitless financial resources, like,
yeah.
which appears to be, like, one of the things that continually helps him to evade any consequences. The sort of inciting incident of the movie, or what you think is the inciting incident for a lot of what happens, is that he is the ostensibly the boyfriend of Drea, and then he encourages her to make a, you know, kind of sexy video for him, which then winds up being shared with, like, the entire school, and kind of leads to her social downfall, which, again, it's great the way that they do this, because I feel like this is very real life, where instead of the school, like, penalizing Drea for having made the video, they're very careful to say that's not what anyone is upset about. They're upset about the fact that in the moment when she thinks that he leaked the video, she slapped Max. So it's not what she did, it's what she did to attempt to hold him accountable, that it was done right, the wrong way, because there is no right way. Like, there is no right way to try to hold this man accountable, as we see as the movie goes on and on and on.
Yeah, and it's really interesting too, the way that, you know, the strangers on a train setup, Eleanor's character wants revenge against this girl Carissa, who we believe for a good section of the movie is this girl who she's a gay girl who, like, kind of made Eleanor out to be this sort of predatory lesbian when they were younger, and kind of broke her heart. And so Carissa is, you know, this character who's this young queer person. And when it's time for Drea to, like, do revenge on her, it's somewhat straightforward. Like, it kind of just goes the way that they plan for it to go. And then Carissa's, like, kind of out of a lot of the movie. And when it comes to trying to do revenge on Max, it's, like, this much more complicated, fraught process, because he's the kind of person, this, you know, young straight white man with money, that is so much harder to take down, right?
Yeah, yeah. And, like, Carissa certainly does have money and connections. And we see, later when we do check back in on her and on another victim of their revenge, who is played by Sansa from Game of Thrones, and who is just absolutely phenomenal. But when they kind of check back in on those characters, they're in, like, I don't even really know if you would call it, like, a rehab facility, but they're in, like, basically, like, a super, super fancy spa,
yes,
where they are, like, you know, having to go through some steps.
Yes, they are. And it's interesting. So this movie, I think, has a very interesting relationship with queerness, because one, Eleanor is a queer character. Part of her cover ends up being flirting with Max, but she's actually interested in Max's sister, Gabby. But then we eventually find out that there was sort of this, you know, queer connection, queer call out, queer missed moment, whatever you want to call it, between her and Drea. And I think that this movie does something kind of fascinating with the queering of that relationship, the Eleanor and Drea relationship. What did you make of that?
Oh, I think it's so interesting. So, like, are we going to talk about the twist?
We probably have to. Yeah.
So it turns out that the story that Eleanor has told of this girl that she felt so comfortable and so safe with, that she came out And then that girl turned it around and told everyone that she was a predatory lesbian who tried to like hold her down and kiss her. It turns out the woman who did that was Drea herself. And that this whole thing, like Eleanor has kind of like scheme within a scheme to get the upper hand and to manipulate Drea. So it's super interesting. And we get a lot of kind of will they, won't they between Eleanor and Drea. Like there's the moment when they have successfully gotten revenge on Carissa and they're kind of like actually laying in bed sort of cuddling together. And Drea says, "You're just like me." And Eleanor says, "Yeah, I am." And she's like kind of stroking Drea's hair and stuff. And it's like, at first you think like, is this like a sad moment that she's like, you know, yeah, I am. And it's like, really, I wish I wasn't. Or is it like, is it about how, you know, who created me? Did I create you? Did you create me? What happened? Or is it like, yeah, like, is it a queer point of connection?
Yeah. And I think that this movie is full of that. And a thing that reminds me of PLL a lot is, you know, a thing we talk about all the time on PLL is it's like, okay, there's like the ostensible straight ship. Like technically, okay, Spencer is dating Toby, but like the relationships that have so much more power and verve for her are her relationships with the other liars or her sort of hate flirt relationship with Mona or whatever, you know, her dynamic with Jenna. And I think that this movie is such an interesting case of like the Drea character does have a male love interest who's like around, but the relationship that is carrying this is the relationship between Drea and Eleanor, and not in like a, oh, what a, not in a book smart way, right? Where it's like book smart, you know, those two characters, you're like Amy and Molly, you're like, love them. They are best friends. Love them as best friends. Don't necessarily ship them. Right. But with Drea and Eleanor, it's a very, it feels like a very specifically queer dynamic between them. And something I wanted to talk about is like, why isn't this an explicit love story between these two characters?
Well, listen, I think just because, like, just because they don't make out in this movie, just because they don't have sex in this movie, I think it can be a love story, even if it's not a romantic love story. Like,
I agree.
There's a part at the end where I think Drea says to Eleanor, "I feel like we're fucked up soulmates."
And yeah.
Like, that, I mean, I think that's like a totally accurate read on their relationship. Now, one of the things that I think, like you're talking about, like Drea's male love interest who's around, and also Gabby, who is Eleanor's like kind of normie love interest. as the story goes along, and like you kind of like, you know, you kind of root for those relationships a little bit, but like with these two, like when Drea and Eleanor are in a scene together, when they're doing a plan together, like everything is a powder keg. Everything is heightened. Everything is like love, death, betrayal, mushrooms, like everything is, you know, everything is just really intense. And like it's questionable, like, is that good for them? Is that healthy for them? Like,
yeah,
that's certainly like a question mark. However, that's sort of like that intensity is what like really makes them very compelling, but also you can see why, like, yeah, I don't know, like, would that be a romance that would last, like, if that's what it was, like, do they need the normie love interests, like, does Eleanor need Gabby, does Drea need, I don't even know what that, Raz, the R-named guy, who's her, does she need, like, surfer bod male love interest guy, like, do they need those relationships to, like, keep one foot at least on the ground of reality?
I think that's totally a possibility. And I do, I mean, there is sort of almost like a little bit of a Killing Eve dynamic between them,
yes,
I feel.
Yes.
I see that for sure. And I think a question kind of at the heart of this, and something I wanted to mention too, is like this idea of what makes a love story? Like, who are the lovers? Like, okay, we have the quote unquote lovers of Gabby and Russ, I'm going to go with. But the true love story at the heart of this is between these two people who, like, they seem to make each other feel really alive. They also know how to wound each other the way that nobody else knows how to wound them. And the dynamic between them is really fucked up. Like, maybe we can talk a little bit about that twist and, like, how do you think the twist that essentially Eleanor has been manipulating Drea the entire time, how does that impact the rest of the story for you?
Oh, I feel like it made it 100 times more interesting. Like, I feel like you kind of expected the movie to be going, you know, it zigged when you expected it to zag. And I thought that was really great. And also, you've seen movies before that are like enemies to friends to lovers. And sure. this one really had like a different take on it. Like, cause it starts out, the premise is like that they're going to be strangers and then they become really close. But then it kind of flips the script and says, wait, no, they're enemies. They were always enemies. They're like,
yeah.
And it seems like there's no possible way that this is going to end well for one of, like, it seems like the end is going to be some kind of mutually assured destruction. Like, there's not another way out. But then the movie, the movie kind of takes a different tack and they wind up, right after it seems like they are going to probably destroy each other. It turns again and they wind up finding a way back to each other, which is actually really delightful.
And in a very Vandermeeren twist, of course,
yep.
Someone gets hit by a car.
Someone does get hit by a car. And then, we also have like the hidden cameras, the double insurance, like, it's all very good.
It's all really, really good. Yeah. It is like, it's such a Mona as a kind of twist, right? Of like, oh, this character becomes a lot more interesting when you find out that so much of what you have been seeing is a performance.
Yeah. And we hear a lot, like, in PLL, like, it's, you know, it's overtly masks. Like, what mask is this person wearing of somebody else's face? In this movie, that theme is, like, very similar, but it's called armor. It's, like, the clothes that you're wearing, the persona that you're putting on. Like, what is your armor, and what is who you really are? And I think that that's something that is, like, you know, they try to answer that question at various different times. And a lot of the time, it seems like Eleanor herself doesn't even really know the answer to that.
Well, I totally agree. And I love, there's a part where Eleanor, like, the mask has been put up or brought down. Basically, we, the audience, now understand what Eleanor's plan has been. And she's essentially done her revenge, right? And she's, like, looking at herself in the mirror and has this very rom-com-esque, you know, kind of, like, Cher Horowitz in front of the fountain kind of moment of, like, scrolling through all of these memories with Drea. And it's this moment of her kind of recognizing, like, oh, that did mean something. Like, that did add up to something. And I thought I could be so attached, but actually it turns out that there were maybe some feelings involved, and what, you know, however you classify those feelings, but there was a caringness there and a knowingness, I think, between them.
Well, and I think this fits in really well with, like, what we were talking about in our most recent episode in season 7, which is, like, who is your ride or die? Like, who is your person? Who is with you when the chips are down? Who, like, knows you and has seen you in, like, every facet of your person that you might try to hide from someone?
Yeah.
And I think that, like, the answer pretty clearly for Drea and Eleanor is each other. Like, they're the ride or die. Like, they're the person who is gonna know, like, your deepest, darkest your deepest, darkest stuff that you have going on.
What did you make of Eleanor? I agree with all of that. What did you make of the fact that Eleanor had like a femmed up makeover and then like that was kind of her presentation for the rest of the movie?
I thought that was really interesting. They did femme her up, but I think that I don't feel like she was like super butch in her school uniform and stuff, because like the school uniform seems to be like generally like the little skirts and everything like that. So I felt like they just kind of did the ugly duckling to swan makeover that was like such a staple of the kind of the teen classic movies. But I also thought it was really cool that like the Gabby character, like the you're interested in the sibling of the person or whatever, like that's very sure. Bring It On, you know, that's I thought it was cool that instead of Gabby being the person who's like trying to hold her accountable, like, no, the person you really are is this person who I met on the first day. Gabby was just like, no, you know, that's cool. Like, I like you. I don't care what you, you know, what else is going on.
I really liked the Gabby character a lot. I thought she was really fun and charismatic and just like a cool energy, like not an energy that we often get in these types of movies. She was very laid back. And I really liked that, like, the moment that she pushed back against Eleanor was about her treatment of Drea, that like she kind of stood up for Drea. She was a character who was very had a lot of integrity, I feel. And I liked that a lot.
Yeah, I completely agree. And that, like, again, like, it kind of doesn't, the movie kind of doesn't do what you expect it to. You sort of expect there to be conflict between the two of them because Gabby is Max's sister. So you kind right. of expect her to be, like, you know, in some way against their like, reign of terror that they're trying to do against Max. But she actually, like, kind of, when she hears Drea and Eleanor arguing, says, like, no, like, of course he's a terrible person. Like, he does really fucked up things.
Yeah, yeah. And it, yes, that also felt a little PLL in a way, in terms of, like, all of the weird various sibling dynamics on that show and the way that there's not necessarily inherent loyalty between the siblings all of the time.
Right, right. And then if you're, you know, if you're into Max, you might be into Gabby. If you're into Spencer, you might be into Melissa. Like, just, you know, just putting it out there.
Right.
If you're into Allison, you might be into Jason. You might be into Spencer, vice versa. So.
Yeah, exactly. That one, you just can keep going because it's such a long family. You might be into Charlotte. You might be into Alex Drake. You might be
a Mobius strip. Yeah.
It is. It just like turns all the way around eventually. Yeah.
It's like a giant Netflix algorithm. Like, did you like this? You might
exactly. also like this. An ever evolving web. Yeah.
So another point of PLL comparison. I feel we've talked about this line a lot because I know it's one of our favorites from the show, but like, when did you become the thing that you're yeah. afraid of? So what do you think this means? Like, what do you think this is? When is that moment for Eleanor/Nora? When is that moment for Drea?
Oh, that's such a good question. I mean, I think that for Eleanor, I do think that sort of that moment when she's looking in the mirror is a real moment of reflection for her of like, you know, it's the classic, you got everything you wanted and you're still not happy. And so what does that mean? Right. What do you do with that? And I liked that a lot. And I think that for Drea, when she recognizes that like she was the one who did this thing to Eleanor and kind of has that come to Jesus moment, I think that that's a really powerful moment for her to kind of be like, okay, I've just been playing with people's lives for so long. And this is a person that I cared about, genuinely cared about. But I also think that moment on the bed that you talked about earlier is a really powerful one because it's sort of both of them recognizing that they have the ability to have that humanity and maybe a lot of the times they're sort of choosing not to. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's really interesting. I think it kind of, I don't know that I feel like there's one singular moment in the movie. I think it kind of evolves a bit. What about you?
Yeah, I think it's really difficult to say. And there's a moment with Drea where she talks about, like, every time I did some kind of mean girl thing, I would tell myself it wasn't really me, but that was who I had to be in order to, like, get what I wanted and in order to fit in. But, like, that wasn't true. Like, nobody was forcing her to say those things or do those things. She was doing it, like, of her own accord. And I think that, like, I think it's just fascinating. I also think it's so fascinating that, like, they are so successful. Like, they're very successful in their revenge that they plot long term against people, against each other, against those who have wronged them. But they also we definitely get quite a few moments, I think, where we see each of them experiencing remorse. And I feel like that is a departure from PLL. What would it be like if we got to see A show remorse?
Right, right. I mean, that's a great question. And I think that that's, like, so much of Mona's character arc ends up being about her kind of atoning for the things that she has done. And I mean, I think the closest that we get to A showing remorse is through Mona, because Charlotte certainly never gets any kind of redemption arc. Neither does Shauna. Toby barely even counts. And I mean, Alex Drake, the less said, the better. So it's sort of like a lot of that, I think, plays out through Mona, the original A, the best A. And what's interesting is, like, she's never really forgiven by the Liars. Like, that is sort of the constant push-pull, is that she wants to be part of the group and wants to prove herself to them. And maybe you could say Hannah forgives her, but I don't really think the other Liars ever do.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with that. But also, like, we never, like, I guess Mona does, like, make various apologies at different times, but, like, in this movie, like, it is, like, they say things like, this doesn't feel good. Like, it still feels terrible. Like, you know, we're doing all this, but, like, it's leaving an empty hole inside. Why are we not happy? Like, why is this not making us happy? And I think that that's, like, really interesting. I would have loved to see, like, you know, Charlotte exploring that.
I mean,
I agree, Alex Drake, the less said, the better. I would not really want her exploring it in her British accent, but, like, I think it would be, I just think that would be an interesting, you know, an interesting thing for any of the A's to ask themselves.
Well, yes. And I feel like Mona, the way that the series leaves Mona, it's such an interesting place where, like, she is perfectly poised to sort of have that moment, right? Because she has kidnapped Alex Drake and Mary. And it's like, is this the thing that's going to make her happy? And I think had the show gone on or explored sort of that further, had the perfectionist maybe not been anything like it was and actually been a good show that was genuinely interested in the Liar's trauma, we might have gotten that exploration of, like, what happens when you do the thing that you're like, this is what's going to make it work. This is what's going to make us happy. And it ultimately doesn't at all. It's also interesting from the standpoint of A as a character who is often giving the Liar some version of what they want, but often in a way that really does not make them happy.
Yeah. Well, and this movie also goes into the idea of, like, is it true that hurt people?
Sure.
Or is there something about teenage girls that is just, like, a little wild all the time? Like, is
or
that,
both.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that the idea that, like, hurt people, because, like, certainly, like, at the starting point, Eleanor and Drea have both been hurt, like, by the actions of themselves, by the actions of others. And we've definitely seen, like, Mona be hurt by Allison and the Liars be hurt by Mona. And, Charlotte be hurt by her family. Like, we've seen that over and over again, where definitely, like, the person who seems to be the villain is a person who's dealing with their own trauma and not handling it well.
Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting the way that this show positions, like, we're rooting for flawed characters. We are rooting for them to do their revenge, right? And that's a way in which it really does remind me of Heathers, where it's like, you're like, oh, this is, these are actually some pretty bad things that these people are doing, but like they are the story is positioned in such a way and written in such a way that you are rooting for them to, you know, to figure it out and to get away with it to a certain extent. And yeah, I think that it's interesting. I do think that the strangers on a train thing falls apart a little bit in a high school scenario, because it's like, well, everybody does kind of know everybody. Like, I feel like that became a little bit maybe less necessary as a structural part of this film. But I think it's a really fun, I mean, it's a fun setup. It's a totally fun setup. And I liked it as sort of the catalyst for a lot of what happened.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree. Now, another kind of point of comparison, we've talked about the scene in PLL when Hannah says to Spencer, like, in the early seasons, like, not all of us have rich lawyers for parents. Like, you know, and you know, as the show goes on, they kind of lose sight of that a little bit, but, like, because money becomes completely not real. But,
exactly.
Like, classism is definitely, like, a for motivating sure. force in this film. Drea's on scholarship. She has, like, you know, she has certain things that she needs to get out of this experience to try to, like, launch her into an Ivy League college and to try to, like, you know, really, like, change the course of her life. And also, like, she is more expendable because she is not, like, as rich as her boyfriend and all of her other friends, or as rich as Eleanor, even, in terms of just, like, shielding herself from, like, the consequences of her own actions. So how do you see class playing out in this movie compared to how it plays out on PLL?
Oh, that's such an interesting question. I think that there are for sure comparisons to be made between Hannah and Drea a lot, like, especially that idea of the person who is the most put together on the inside feels like the biggest fraud and feels like they have the most to lose. And so they're doing everything they can to present this image of, like, I am so put together. I am so on top of myself. I am so, you know, just beautiful and pristine, because it's covering up a lot. Right. And I think, you know, there's an interesting, like, you made the sort of Hannah and Spencer comparison. And I think there is an interesting thing about, like, Spencer can afford to be a little messier sometimes, even though that's frowned upon in the Hastings family. But, like, literally, she has in some ways less to lose. I think that.
No one is bundling Hannah off to Europe. Like,
no one is bundling Hannah off to Europe. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Hannah gets to go to, like, go visit her dad and be sad or something. I do think that probably my main complaint with Do Revenge is that I think it could be a little more streamlined. I think conceptually it could be a little bit more streamlined. And I think that some of the class stuff could have hit harder had it been a little bit more streamlined.
Yeah. Okay. So one of our disagreements about this movie is it too long or not? I think it is not too long, but I will say that the two movies that I had most recently watched or tried to watch before this, one of them was that fucking eternal Jurassic Park movie on Peacock that just, like, I don't know how that movie wouldn't end. But yeah, that Jurassic Park movie was like 2.5 hours or something. It was super, super long. And it was like three movies. It did not need to be that long by any stretch of the imagination. And then the other movie that we tried to watch a few weeks ago was the newest James Bond movie, which was like 2 hours and 43 minutes long. And we eventually gave up on that movie because it was bad. We were not into it. And it still somehow had like almost an hour and a half left when we were just like ready for it to be done. So having like recently watched or tried to watch those two movies, I felt like this was just a breezy 2 hours. Like, oh God, 2 hours. Yeah. And it was like female centered and it was, sure. it was really queer and it was fun. Yeah. I did not think it was too long, but that also might've been just based on like how much I was enjoying it versus how much I had not enjoyed my previous two movie viewing experiences. And also I think you need to like, you know, you were coming at it, like you said, you were like sort of eager for the movie to end due to personal reasons.
Yes. I have some personal biases that are perhaps influencing my feeling about the runtime of this film.
Bina, does your girlfriend think that this movie was too long?
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Oh, okay.
We both said that multiple times. Again, there were slightly extenuating circumstances that might have influenced our thinking around that. So, yeah, enough said. But so we can go back and forth on whether we think it was too long. I will say that Otto Straddle agreed with me that it was too long.
Ah, well, okay.
Just saying.
I mean, that's like you're bringing like the weight of queer media down on your side of the equation. That's fine. But I thought, I mean, I liked it. I'm trying to think about like what would you cut? Like if you were cutting from this film, like what would you take out? What do you feel like wasn't needed?
I was thinking about that, and I think I would have to watch it more carefully to mm-hmm. make that call. I do think that there was some stuff that just probably could have been a little bit streamlined and a little bit like a thing that I would have liked for this movie to include, not in addition, but maybe instead of something else, is that I did want a moment of resolution between Eleanor and Carissa, because that... You know, we sort of get different pieces of that story, but I felt like, you know, it would have been nice for like these two queer girls to be able to kind of bury the hatchet a little bit.
Interesting. okay, so one thing that I would have cut when Eleanor visits Drea in the hospital after she's hit her with her car. I think you could have cut Eleanor from that scene and just had Drea start to get all these text messages from, you know, basically like in the Veronica Mars world from the 09ers, like, you know,
sure.
all of the rich ass former friends who had kind of been cutting her previously. Now they're all kind of interested in being sympathetic towards her because she's, you know, like the drama of the hour. She's been injured in this car accident and everything. So I think you could cut Eleanor from that scene and it would probably be fine.
That moment reminded me a lot of, did you ever see Ingrid Goes West?
Yes.
That moment reminded me a lot of a scene in Ingrid Goes West.
Yeah.
There's actually, I would say that there's elements of that in here too, that sort of unhinged, you know, obsession, image obsessed sort of element of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I definitely agree with that. But what I would have really liked at the end, because like, this is a movie where like, it, you know, it has like multiple endings, like it kind of like ends with like Drea and Eleanor kind of driving off into the sunset together. And then you also get like these little, you know, these little like credits scenes where you see yes. them kind of making up with their normie love interests.
Yeah.
And things going well there and stuff. And I was wishing for a credit scene where we saw Carissa and, oh my gosh, I should really have looked up her actual character's name, but Carissa and Sansa hooking up in the spa rehab. I would have loved for a scene that brought that closure to Carissa in that way.
I feel like we could have cut, like, I did not need a final scene with Max. Like, I didn't need the movie to end with
Max. Oh, yeah.
I feel like they could have cut that.
Yeah, okay, yes. They could have cut Max's credit scene for sure. But I think that was kind of the point of like, he's so fucking slippery. Like what consequences has he faced? He got kicked out of his fancy private school. He doesn't get his spot at Yale, but you know, his parents are still going to have bought his way into like some other fancy school. And like, he's just so slippery. Like, accountability is not really going to stick to him.
Yeah. Oh, you're totally right. And it is kind of like, yeah, second verse, same as the first with this guy. Like, he's never going to fall that far. You're totally right.
Yeah. So I felt like that was kind of an interesting thing. The thing that I think is the most fascinating about Carissa's character is, like, so it's been set up for, like, the first portion of this movie that she did this thing. She did this thing to Eleanor, which actually Drea had done. And Carissa was actually, like, Eleanor's girlfriend. And then after Drea spread this rumor, like, they kind of, you know, she, like, instantly dropped her and, like, went back into the closet because she was scared and everything. And so later, Eleanor basically says, like, well, that's why she wanted to get revenge on Carissa, is that, like, Carissa kind of ghosted her when she really needed her more than ever. And that motivation is so much less compelling than the motivation of, like, she spread this rumor about me and you know, all this happened. Like, the motivation that she gives in that moment is just, like, the thing that really sticks out to me is, like, you can always find a reason. Like, if you're just hell-bent on destruction, you can find a reason. Like, it doesn't even really matter what the reason is, honestly. So it's just kind of like the liars in A. Like, why are they after them? Who knows? Like, you know,
well,
almost doesn't matter.
It's the line from Scream that I've talked about before. There's always some bullshit reason to kill your girlfriend, you know?
Yes.
There's always some bullshit reason to do revenge on somebody if that's where your heart is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have a question, which is, what are some revenge scenarios that we would enjoy seeing the liars get up to?
Oh my gosh. Well, as you know, any type of revenge on Prezra Fitz for lying to them for years, for, you know, I wish that all of his video cameras had been weaponized against him. That is something that I long would have loved to see. But I would also, you know, the thing about this revenge scenario, like, it's really fun to watch because they're so good at it. They're so competent at it. They're so effective with it.
And they're having a good time with it.
And they each seem to find that very sexy. Like, they both seem to be, like, so super into it.
Revenge mommy.
Yeah. Like, oh, God, yeah. And so I wish that we had ever gotten to see the liars be that competent in the running of a scheme or a heist.
So true.
That's what I really would have loved.
Even, I mean, we actually just probably covered the storyline that's the closest to a liar really getting revenge, which is obviously the, you know, Hannah kidnapping Noel plot. And even that, like, that was very joyless. Like, it's not like Hannah was having a great time or running a great plan. Like, that was a pretty joyless scenario. And also, like, with a character, like, that I didn't really care to have see that done to them. You know what I mean? Like, it's, mm-hmm. it's like, why couldn't that have been Prezria or, you know, or Prezra or, you know, Rollins, or, I mean, I guess Rollins did get it pretty bad, but, or so many of the other characters where it would have been a lot more satisfying. I think any kind of scenario where the liars, or specifically like Arya and Allison, teamed up against Prezra would have been really, really fun. I also think some kind of scenario, like maybe Charlotte and Allison or Charlotte and Melissa teaming up against Ken would have been really great.
I mean, I would have enjoyed any of the liars, like, kind of trying to topple the patriarchy of Rosewood,
yes.
whether it was the police department, whether it was the school, like, and anything like that, I would have been very here for it.
And it also would have been satisfying if Hannah had gotten to really do some revenge against Kate, her evil stepsister, because,
yes.
you know, that was always a thing that was, you know, a thing that sort of tormented Hannah, but I don't feel like she ever really got a lot of closure on that. So that would have been a fun thing.
Great point.
Yeah. But I can't really think of a storyline that happened where there was, like, satisfying liar's revenge happening. I mean, always the best schemes were Mona's, of course.
And oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, I think that I think I would have, there were a lot of opportunities for it. It never got cashed in. If they were going to take vengeance against someone, I would have, Prezra would, of course, like forever and always would be my number one pick.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I agree. Also, another question would be, you know, we've talked about Drea and Eleanor as kind of Allie and Mona. Who are, like, what do you think are the most lethal, I was going to say liar combos, but really we could say character combos, like duos that could, like, get the most shit done?
Well, I mean, one of them is always going to be Mona. So I would say, like, Mona and Allison would probably be the top. I also think Mona and Spencer, if the two of them really, like, teamed up to wreck some havoc, I feel like they would be very high on the list. I also, this is maybe a hot take, but I'm going to say Jenna and Arya. If the two of them, teamed up, I feel like they would be pretty effective together.
I am shocked that Charlotte and Melissa was not your first.
Of course, Charlotte and Melissa. It almost goes without saying, but you're right. I definitely should have said it. They would be 100% incredible.
Also, had Allison and Charlotte gotten to team up and do some revenge, that would have been a good bonding experience for them, I think.
It would have. I would also take a Charlotte Emily pair up.
Oh, Charlotte Emily or Charlotte Spencer. I mean, they're related. Yeah. Yeah. Weirdly, like, the combo we get is like Charlotte and Alex Drake, which is like the combo that nobody asked for.
Oh, I mean, gosh, what if we got like a Spencer Alex Drake, like Parent Trap style team up? I would make fun of it and I would be real judgy about it, but I'd still watch it.
They're not trying to get their parents back together. They're just, I don't know what they're trying to do. I don't know, like, what their Parent Trap scenario would be exactly. They're trying to, like, break up Prezria, maybe. Maybe that's what it is. So was the ending of this movie satisfying to you?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so too. I think I didn't need the boyfriend to come back, and I didn't need Max to come back. But I think the two of them driving off into the sunset together, Drea and Eleanor, I think that was pretty satisfying.
Yeah, I think that was a great ending. And that was even kind of like Thelma and Louise, like, they're in this cool convertible, but they're like driving off into like the bright future instead of like the Grand Canyon. So
I also loved the physicality of them in that scene, that they're like, it's not even a handhold. It's like a full on snuggle. Like, Drea kind of like pulls Eleanor into her side. And there's just this real sense of like this intimacy between these two people, which was really fun. And I think, I mean, we haven't mentioned it yet, but the chemistry between these two actresses is just off the charts.
Wow. Yes. Completely off the charts. My goodness. Like, You had told me that, like, you had, so that was something that, like, I had in my head, like, going into it, and I definitely, like, it was evident from, like, their early scenes together, but I feel like it kicked up from, like a 7 or an 8, like, it kicked up to, like, a 15 to 16 in the scene when everyone is doing mushrooms and everybody is mushroomed and the two of them are like dancing in a bathroom stall.
Yes.
Together, and it was just like, whoo.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it also then almost kicked up another notch once the twist was revealed, because it was just this like,
oh, the close face watches post twist were just like, there were many, many.
When they were like riding into the party together on that, I don't know, it was like a wagon or something. And they're like kind of like whisper, threatening, flirting with each other. But like they're really close to one another. And there's like, I mean, there's like kind of going back to what you were saying before about sort of who knows you the best, who's your ride or die. It's sort of like, who are you your most authentic self around? And I think for both of these people, they can be their most authentic selves around one another.
Yeah. Completely. So, one of my favorite, like a line that I think about a lot from the Buffyverse is when Angel has been turned back into Angelus and Jenny Colander is talking to her uncle, and she's like, people are going to die. This is insane. And he says, it is not justice we serve. It is vengeance. Mm. And the difference, I think, like the distinction between justice and vengeance, which we see a lot in the Buffyverse when like Anya becomes a vengeance demon and when sure. Willow seeks vengeance, like vengeance is like really a theme over there. So what this movie is called Do Revenge. Like, what is it that Drea and Eleanor are seeking? Is it justice or is it vengeance?
Oh, I think it's vengeance. I think that there's this internal part of them that yearns for justice, absolutely. But I do think that part of what attracts these two characters to one another is that desire for vengeance, is that sort of burning red hot, like, I don't just want, you know, I don't just want you to get what's coming to you. I want you to be destroyed. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's sort of, yeah, that's a big part of the attraction.
Well, see, I feel like when Eleanor starts talking about trying to destroy the other rich, popular kids, about how, like, she has this scheme within a scheme where Drea is going to get back in with them. She's going to get invited to, like, this blowout end of year party. And then she's going to, like, wear a camera. Footage is going to leak that's going to ruin all of these people's lives. And it's going to come from Drea's IP address. I feel like when they start talking about that part of the scheme, and like, you don't care a ton about those other characters, like, sure, most of them, you know Trey's name, but I don't feel like you know a lot of the other characters, but like, you do know Trey and you do care about her and what happens to her a little bit. And I feel like at that point is when it crosses over, like, it has been like kind of a hazy, like, justice, vengeance. And when it gets to like targeting those people who were not like, they were kind of just collateral damage in like the larger war that was being fought there. At that point, it does seem like, oh, this is different. This is just like cold vengeance that doesn't really matter in that same way, in that same like hot, cold kind of way.
Well, I also think the moment that Eleanor hits Drea with the car is another moment of like, oh yeah, this isn't just atonement. This is something bigger. Yeah. And I kind of like, I admire that the script goes there and that it lets it be dark. That to me feels very Cruel Intentions, and that like, no, we're letting these teenagers be like dark and do like really dark things to one another.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of Cruel Intentions, I actually felt like Carissa is kind of styled like the, what's the name of the girl that Sarah Michelle Gellar kisses in Cruel Intentions?
Oh, Selma Blair?
I was trying to think of her character's name. Yeah, but like, don't you feel like Carissa is actually like styled a little bit like her? Like with the hair around the face and like kind of pale?
I can totally see that. Yeah, for sure. I'm sure that there were so many little visual references. Yeah. I that's a very interesting point, though. The vengeance, justice sort of continuum.
Yeah, I felt like it was I felt like it was really in flux as the movie. And but then like, so then they kind of turn away from the plan of like mad vengeance and mutually assured destruction. And then they turn to no justice. We're just going to get Max. We have what we need. We're going to ruin him and it's going to feel so good. And then it does feel good and it does work and everything. But I'll tell you a thing that I really love about the ending of this movie, which is, and I guess you could argue that like, this is a scene that could maybe be cut for the runtime, but it's when Drea is talking to Sarah Michelle Gellar and kind of they're wrapping up like, well, you know, Max has been kicked out of the school, an opening has opened up at Yale because he's obviously not going to be going there. So like, does Drea want Sarah Michelle Gellar to like call Yale and try to like get her in? And Drea kind of says, you know, I have been like shooting for this my whole life and I'm starting to feel like that was like maybe not the right path. Like maybe I wasn't wanting it for the right reasons, and maybe I should be looking at like what other choices are out there for me. And I really wish that like in the world of PLL, we had ever gotten to see one of them make a decision like that. I really liked that in terms of growth for her character. And Sarah Michelle Gellar is great as the only adult in the movie. She doesn't like try to push Drea. She's like, I mean, my advice to you is stay lost as long as you can.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, what a choice to be like, we're going to have one adult in this movie and that adult is going to be Sarah Michelle Gellar. I mean, loved that choice. Loved that choice so much. I agree. I did like that scene. I wouldn't have cut that scene. But going back to a minute ago, what you were saying about sort of the ending of them deciding that it is about justice, I think it's so interesting that the desire for justice or for the whole Max situation sort of ends up kind of superseding any of the kind of petty revenge plots specifically against one another, you know, that they are able to be sort of united in this quest for justice. In a sense.
Well, and they go from like this brutal fight where like they hate each other and they're going to destroy each other to, oh my God, I love you in the space of like,
yes.
Yeah. In the space of like 5 seconds. And it's beautiful.
It is really beautiful. It's super beautiful. Is there more that we would like to say about Do Revenge?
Man, I feel like we could talk about it for a long time, but if you haven't seen it yet, highly recommend. Queer. Now you said it was queer, but not in the way that you wanted it to be queer. Is that because you really wanted it to be like explicitly a love story between Drea and Eleanor?
I think that like my idealized version of this movie would be that, but I'm okay that it wasn't that. I don't like, I didn't need it to be that, but like, if I was going to have my perfect version of this film, that's what it would be.
So I think that one of the really interesting things about the way that queerness works in this movie is that like Eleanor, so like we know that coming out was like a big deal to her. Although when she's recounting it, like in the present day, she says like, you know, coming out was no big deal. Everybody's gay. But the issue was that she was made out to be a predatory lesbian.
Yes.
And I think that that is a really interesting distinction. And I also think it's really interesting the way in which queerness is not seen as a big deal, generally speaking, in the movie. Like, when Gabby comes over and, like, kind of starts hitting on Eleanor, like, first thing, like, that is not like seen as weird or unusual or anything. It's just like, it happens the way that like in any other, you know, kind of 90s teen rom-com, like the male love interest would come over and be acting that way. And also Eleanor at one point, like does say like my ex-girlfriend is going out with my ex-boyfriend. And like Max doesn't really like bat an eye about that. Like nobody acts like it's, you know, like nobody acts biphobic about it at all.
I agree. I totally agree. Although I actually think that there is a very, like, this movie is dealing with a really subtle kind of form of homophobia. I think pretty deftly. Like one of my favorite details is that, you know, there was the whole predatory lesbian story about Eleanor that we eventually learn was started by Drea. And there's that moment when before Drea finds out that she was involved in that and she's really upset and Eleanor is kind of trying to comfort her. And Drea's like, well, I definitely don't want you to touch me right now. And we sort of see Eleanor react to that. And I feel like there's that element. There's also like, there's moments of Max almost being like maybe a little too cool with the idea of, you know, this kind of sexual fluidity. And I think that it's really, really smart the way that this movie sort of shows like, okay, the teens, you know, in quotes, the teens are cool with gay people now, but there's still these little traces that come through obviously more strongly in, you know, certain communities than others. And that it's really like, it's almost exploring like the microaggressions of being a queer teen in a lot of ways.
I think you're right. And Drea even makes like a pretty homophobic remark about Carissa
Yes. Yeah.
When it, like, pretty early on in the film.
Yeah. Yeah. And seems completely sort of disbelieving that, like, a queer person could do something bad to another queer person. Like, it has this very sort of rudimentary idea of, like, what the queer experience is.
So do you read Drea as a queer character?
I mean, I read everybody as a queer character.
they have to get up really early in the morning to draw a character that we're not going to think is queer. That's a pretty valid point.
Yeah. I mean, I do think a thing that's really interesting about Drea is, like, she's pretty disconnected from sex with boys, it seems. And that might not mean a lot, or it might mean a lot. I do think that Drea is a queer character. I don't know that she's textually being written that way, but I think that the subtext is there if you are looking for it. What about you?
Oh, I definitely think that you can read her as a queer, like, and this is kind of why I like the Ali Mona comparison, because I think, yeah, like, you could definitely read her as a character who's, like, trying to work out her own internalized biphobia. I am hard put to think of a scene where, like, a female character was less into a dude going down on them than we see in this movie. And also, like, Russ is his name. I
okay.
Russ is going down on her, and she's, like, checking her phone for texts from Eleanor.
So, yeah.
I mean, that's definitely, you know, that's definitely not, like, strictly heterosexual behavior, I feel.
And even their, like, their date, like, with the paint and all of that, like, it almost feels like the movie is sort of making fun of the rom-comness of it, right?
Yeah, I feel like also that's, like, kind of a bisexual scene, because I think it's, you know, really, like, the first thing that comes to mind is the scene from 10 Things I Hate About You.
Sure.
But also, I'm going to throw out Better Than Chocolate, which has, like, mm-hmm. that whole, okay. like, body painting print scene. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's there if you're looking for it, for sure. Also, when you were saying about, you know, the sort of Ali Mona connection there, I think that you could also make an argument about a little bit of, like, Ali Page in there. In terms of Drea really sort of rejecting the potential queerness.
I have a question then. We thought we were done talking about it, but we're not. Is Gabby the Page of this situation? Is Gabby Page and is Drea, like, Allison? Is one person, like, the person who still has, like, feet in reality? Whereas the other person is, like, it's going to be, like, full on, like,
chaos
all the time.
I mean, probably, yes. Eleanor is not very Emily, I don't think. But I think if we're sort of making that comparison, yeah, I can see that. I can see that for sure.
Like, I mean, Gabby is, like, going to take you on a picnic date, and Drea is going to take you on a date where you fake your own death. Like, that,
exactly.
that just seems to be the breakdown.
I think that says a lot right there. I agree. So now, do we have more that we want to say about this film?
I think we've got it.
You think we've covered it? We've covered it. But there's a lot in here. I think that there's a lot in here, and I would really love to hear listener thoughts on this movie. Anybody who's seen it, and anybody who hasn't, if you're still listening for some reason, and don't mind the fact that you have been spoiled, please do watch this movie, because it's really fun. And it's, you know, it's nice to support female filmmakers. It's nice to support female led movies, for whatever it's worth on Netflix. I don't really know how all that works, but, if you have thoughts on this, you can of course send us an email at everybodyapodcast@gmail.com. You can check out our Instagram at Everybody A Podcast, our Spotify, Everybody A, Everybody Gay. And you can also leave us a rating and review on iTunes. Go ahead.
Yeah. Don't forget to tell us if you thought it was too long or if it was the perfect length. And if there are any biases that are playing into your personal opinions about that.
Yes, what your personal reasoning is. If you have a fun story of like the context of you watching this movie, we'd love to hear that too. You know, please feel free to share. We're going to be continuing to do more bonus content over the next little bit before diving into 7B. So yeah, until then.
Take care.